This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the Bill Murray voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Bill Murray, indeed. Name the film.
Groundhog Day. Many films that he starred in, of course, but Groundhog Day is applicable to your voice today. Talk to us. What's going on?
True. Do you think that's his most famous film? Just thinking of Bill Murray films. If I think of Bill Murray, I do think of Groundhog Day.
Well, Ghostbusters, the franchise, of course.
True.
Yeah. Lost in Translation was one of the more recent ones that some of the younger kids might know. But many films. Scrooged was another.
I'd say that Ghostbusters would be top. I think Groundhog Day second. I'm going to go with that. But yeah, Groundhog Day at the moment, which isn't a bad thing. But I just feel like, yeah, it is Groundhog Day every day. I get up, I follow the same routine every single day. And I feel like you could give me a moment in time in the next 2-3 weeks and I could tell you exactly where I'm going to be. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, this is a positive thing, is it?
It is. It's this stage of the season, or the fact that the season's just ended. It's a really, really busy time in that you could imagine there's lots of lads at the moment finding out whether they're going to have a contract for next year, whether their options are being taken up, whether they're going to get a new contract, whether they're going to be moving on. And so because this week in particular is that, you do tend to, as an agent, get a lot of calls because it is most of the time you have a bit of a steer as to what the goalkeeping departments might look like next season. But of course, there's always a few surprises that crop up on days like today and certainly days this week. So I just try and make a point of, during this week in particular and week before, week after, of effectively having the same, that keeping myself as free as possible, knowing that the phone is going to be quite busy. So my day, without boring you with the exact schedule, because we could be here all day, but I have the same process every day. I get up early, I have my coffee, I play with the dogs for a little bit, and then I have 3 hours of making a list of all the people I'm going to be contacting in the day. And it's normally quite an extensive list. Then I'll get myself to the gym, because of course our bodies are a temple. Well, I mean, mine more than yours. But then, yes, then it's a case of back and fielding phone calls for about 10 to 12 hours. That is my life at the moment.
So it takes you 3 hours to make a list. That's what I'm taking from...
Yeah, because it sounds quite simple, but I'll be scouring spreadsheets, scouring kind of goalkeepers worldwide, considering who I need to contact, maybe chasing certain people up. I'm a real geek when it comes to lists in my phone. So if I think of anything, and you know this, I've got the memory of a goldfish, really, really bad. So I have to make a note in my phone. But then what it means in the morning, when I've got a nice couple of hours, 2-3 hours to myself, I can go through that list, know who I need to contact. So it's all quite process driven, which I do like. And then again, I'll make a note in my diary for a few days time that I might need to chase someone up again, or if there's something I haven't done, I might put it to the next day. I mean, I'm a classic for that, I think, like a lot of people, where you'll have a to-do list and just some days where maybe you're not feeling it quite as much. I do move quite a lot to the following day, but there are certain things that are very important, and certainly I guess in the football world things do move very quickly.
Okay, well, I think that sounds like a positive. It's a very forward-thinking structure. As long as you're not waking up every morning and smashing your alarm clock, then where I go... I mean, I'm guessing you don't actually have an alarm clock. You probably have an iPhone, don't you, by your bed?
True. And, I mean, look, every day is obviously slightly different. I'm not going through the same process that Bill Murray did. You know, I'm not sort of killing myself on certain days because it is still a different day. So, yeah, we're not... It's not quite Groundhog Day.
Good stuff. We've got plenty to discuss, Richard. So shall we get on with the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, we are going to start in the Premier League, of course, and at the Amex, where Brighton were beaten 5-1 at home by Everton. Quite the result, this. Quite the weekend for football. Quite the weekend for goals going in, has to be said. It's been like that for the past couple of weeks, I think. And we said last week about Emi Martinez putting in a classic Emi Martinez type of performance for Aston Villa. Well, this was Jordan Pickford putting in a Jordan Pickford performance for Everton. He kept Evan Ferguson at bay a few times, a good save from Alexis McAllister. He was barging players out of the way. He was grimacing. He was gritting his teeth. He was playing up to the cameras. There was banter with the crowd. Everything you'd expect from Jordan Pickford on a vintage Jordan Pickford display was indeed on display here.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And I know he said this a few times, but it's very much like he did this time last season when they were in a similar position. They had to win a couple of games, and from memory, he pulled out a couple of big performances, and this was a big one here. And in particular, he mentioned a few of the saves there and a couple of notes. Certainly the tip onto the bar I thought was exceptional. You know, up high to his left, the athleticism that he showed, the speed to get himself up there and get the fingertips to it was top. I thought the saves low that he made a couple down low to his left and made one down low to his right. Kind of similar saves where he's had to manufacture them a little bit to get them up and round the post, or in the case of the one to the right, up and onto the post. And he just looked really, really pumped. I mean, I know he normally does. We talk about that a lot in terms of his style of goalkeeping and the energy that he tends to play with, but it almost felt like he took it to another level in this game. And there was a moment as well, quite an amusing moment, where he's come out, good punch, got it out of danger, was running back towards his goal, wanting to get there as quick as he can. One of the Brighton players in his way, trying to slow him down that little bit. And the way in which he just barged him out the way, and rightly so, because you're rushing back to get in your goal. But you could just see the energy in him. And we've said it so many times, and repeating the point I made initially, that when it comes to the biggest of games, that's one of the things that I'll certainly give Jordan Pickford, is that in regards to his mentality, he really is someone that really steps up. You know, we talk about that a lot about goalkeepers that maybe in the bigger moments might get that little bit nervous or feel slightly differently about a game. It does seem like with Jordan Pickford, it definitely brings out the best in him.
And it seems when he's in this mood, he's coming for absolutely everything. And more often than not, he's diving for everything too. But it just felt like yesterday, it was just on acid. He goes for everything, doesn't he? Even when there's absolutely no chance he's going to reach a shot, he will always dive.
Yeah, which, and I don't mind this sometimes, and there are moments when it's going way wide and people will ask questions, but again, it's the way that a lot of goalkeepers are programmed. You know, it is that we set the shot and you go to explode, which he does. And as you say, sometimes the ball might be that little bit outside the post, but he will get that full dive away. Again, I don't mind that. That, again, for me, certainly with a Jordan Pickford, just shows that he really is tuned in. You know, the energy levels are as high as they can be. And in fairness to him, because this is the other bit, we talk a lot about state management as a goalkeeper, and sometimes you can be overhyped for a game. We've seen that before with goalkeepers, and then that can impact your decision making. But in Jordan Pickford's case, in fairness, these bigger games where you might look at him and get the impression that maybe he is overhyped, he seemingly makes really good decisions when he's in that state.
Let's just quickly talk about Jason Steele, because the third goal was credited as an own goal from Steele. A stinker from Steele, said Chris Sutton on co-commentary. Your thoughts on that one? And the second goal too, nothing really said about this. It was a great volley from Abdoulaye Doucouré. But I'd just like to know whether you felt Steele could have potentially saved it.
No, I don't think so. I think that, look, it's a tough one for a goalkeeper when you're moving across the goal like that. It's an excellent volley. It's just inside the post. And actually what I'd say is he takes up a true position. You know, I think you might see some goalkeepers that then move even further over and maybe even overcover the near post. He takes up quite a true position at the point of impact, and it is just the top finish that just creeps inside the post. Good pace on the volley. So no, I certainly wouldn't put anything down to him on that particular one. And the own goal was interesting to me, because this is very much how Brighton goalkeepers are taught to defend crosses, in that they do leave a large amount of space to that near post, because statistically speaking, goalkeepers taking up that more advanced position, you do have more chance of cutting out the cross. You can see exactly what he's trying to do here. He's taken up an aggressive position. As the ball's about to come in, he has gone early, and the reason being, he's obviously read what the player's likely to do, and unfortunately for him, it's come in so quickly, taking the step to his left, and he can't react quickly enough, and then it's down to luck, really. You're kind of hoping that it hits you and bounces off you and goes away from danger, and he's really unfortunate in that it hits him, goes in the goal. Look, is it a stinker again? I think it's one of those that, yeah, he could have just taken up a position like you see some goalkeepers do and hug the near post and let the ball flash across and they tap it in at the far post. It's still the same result. I do quite like the way in which Brighton goalkeepers defend crosses. I think that we've seen it with both Steele, Sanchez in particular, where they take up that aggressive start position, cut so much out of source. So I suppose the argument for it would be, for this one goal that's gone in as a result of taking up such an aggressive position, I've got no doubt they've saved handfuls of goals over the season because of it too.
St James's Park, Newcastle 0, Arsenal 2, and Aaron Ramsdale with a couple of decent stops in this one, one of which was credited as a potential save of the season contender by Martin Tyler. It was also given a wow by Gary Neville. That was the header he saved point blank from Fabian Schär.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's a very good save. But this is, and again, I suppose it's what we do on this podcast. It's also, look, you don't want to take it away from goalkeepers when they get this kind of reaction, because we'll happily take it. Now, was it one of the saves of the season?
No.
No, I don't think it's probably in Aaron Ramsdale's top 10 this season. He's made some unbelievable saves. But again, it just goes back to the, I suppose, level of goalkeeping knowledge with a lot of these pundits. And as I say, look, we'll take it when we're given it. The bit he did really well on this save, and it wasn't really commented on, was the awareness to get as much power on he did. It was almost like a volleyball save, you know, where the actual save itself, I'm sure that Aaron Ramsdale would have expected himself to react and make the save, but it was the speed of thought to actually get enough power on the parry to actually get it over the head of the person in front of him. That's what makes this a top, top save. No one really broke it down as that. I think it was just an overreaction in the moment. But look, top save. And he did have a very good game. So did Nick Pope. In fact, both goalkeepers, I thought, were excellent on the day. Loved the save that Nick Pope made one-on-one. I don't know why, but the thought came to me. I just thought, he's the Terminator. That was a thought that came to me when he just stood up, hits him. Now, when I say hits him, you can see he moves his shoulder, like top upper arm shoulder towards the ball. No extras. It was just one of them stood up, bang. I remember Manuel Neuer making a similar save with his forearm, and that was quite a famous save where, again, just stood up, looked so strong and just batted it away, but no histrionics, nothing extra. I really, really enjoyed that save. But I thought both were excellent on the day. Really good spread from Nick Pope as well, where he came out, judged the situation very well, made himself very, very big. Aaron Ramsdale, good save first half with his feet. Quite a tricky one, this, where he takes quite a wide set position, but I thought the speed at which he was able to get down, because it's a real tricky one when you take a wide set position when it is going through the legs, to then be able to manipulate the body to make the save in the way he did. A really good claw out. And again, the commentators didn't really pick up on this too well either. They suggested that he hesitated, which he didn't. He had to allow the ball to come all the way across to then get the timing right to get a full hand on it and bat it away in the way that he did. But I thought it was really good proactive goalkeeping. And then again, just, I feel like I'm digging out the commentators a lot here, but the cross that he didn't claim, which I think Gary Neville said something along the lines of, the referees have got so much better with this now, what, in not giving a foul when it's a foul. Like, blatantly a foul. If that ball ends up in the net, I promise you VAR are giving a foul. Because you've seen it three times, Gary. You've seen that the arm has gone across the chest, which has impeded him, hence him dropping the ball. And the other guy didn't get anywhere near the ball. It's a foul. But look, that is what it is. I thought, on the whole, the fact that he was negative about that, but gave so much credit for the save, which was a good save, I guess it evens itself out.
Just to go back to that save from Nick Pope, I loved that too. I love it when it was a classic Nick Pope save, wasn't it? It was very much a, get out of my goal, get out of my 18-yard box. I'm just going to throw my shoulder at that. But we actually had a tweet in from Clayton Bierman, who is a Chelsea fan, but said he'd like to know your thoughts on the trend on goalkeepers now pushing the ball out, like Nick Pope did. And of course, it was his shoulder, he didn't push it, but there are a series of saves like this. So he'd like to know the trend on keepers now pushing the ball out rather than, in some case, making what he deems to be relatively easy catches. What's the coaching logic behind that, he asks.
Look, I think most goalkeeper coaches are still old school in the idea of always catch if you can catch. I think that, and again, it's hard to see because we'll often see these replays in super slow motion and you're thinking, surely you can just hold that. You know, I can certainly say from personal experience, when the ball's being smashed in at you, moving a bit, they're not the easiest to hold either. They design these balls in such a way where they're not easy to hold. So you will see a lot now going with the safer option of just ensuring you keep it out the net first and foremost. Of course, the downside of that is if you're not parrying into safe areas, it's getting followed up more often than not. The commentators are giving you a little bit of stick for not holding it. But no, I certainly think, certainly the goalkeeper coach that I know, they will always coach that first and foremost. And of course, a lot of the drills that you're doing training will be built around that. But it is so difficult to replicate a Premier League game situation in training. And I just think, and certainly I know from personal experience as well, when you're in that 50-50 mindset, can I hold it? Should I parry? A lot of the times, goalkeepers will then decide to parry because it is that bit safer.
Good stuff. There was a nice bit before the game, actually, that I saw on this between Shay Given and Nick Pope. Did you see that?
I didn't see that before the game. I did see, because I follow Shay Given on social media, so I did see bits and pieces on social media, him being in at the training ground, I think the day before maybe as well.
Yeah, it was nice to see. I also didn't know that Shay Given is Newcastle's third all-time appearance maker.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't realise he'd made that many.
Yeah, did you know that I'd swapped shirts with Shay Given? Did I ever tell you that?
I'm sure you may have done, but I can't remember. When was this?
That was when we played at St James's Park, and he was very kind, and I actually gave it straight to my friend, who is a big Newcastle fan, so I believe it is sat proudly on his wall. We lost 2-1 right at the end of the game. Obafemi Martins cuts in. I'm not going to lie, I guessed a little bit. I went to my left and he fired it up to my right. If I'd have stood still, you see, this would be me now analysing my own game. Had I stood still and been a bit braver, I think I make the save. But as he's cutting, I thought, oh, he's going to try and whip this to my left. And I just started to go and then he cut it back across me. Devastated.
Was that at St James's Park?
It was, yeah. Which, for all the stadiums that I played in, that, yeah, I know a lot of people say it. And again, it was Newcastle versus Watford, which, you know, greatest respect, it's not their biggest game. But even so, the atmosphere was incredible.
Nice. Okay, over to the Etihad, where Manchester City beat Leeds United 2-1. And if you'd asked me to put the future of the Goalkeepers Union podcast on one decision that Sam Allardyce may have made in his first game as Leeds United manager, I think it would have been that he'd have brought in Joel Robles instead of Ian Melier. And that's exactly what he did. Robles in for his first Premier League game in about 6 years or so. So it stopped a run of 72 successive games for Melier. He's only missed three since stepping in at the start of the 2020-21 season. That was due to injury and I think just to allow the final two games of one season for Kiko Kasia to basically say goodbye to Leeds fans. But it's a massive call from Allardyce. He said it was a massive call and he said that Melier certainly was not very happy and didn't expect him to be very happy about the decision.
Yeah, it's a big call, as you say, really big call. I know he's had a couple of moments lately that we've touched on the pod. And at the same time, I've seen this with a few different teams. Obviously, McCarthy coming in at Southampton. There's a couple of examples in the Championship as well where I think, and I do get it. And again, it's something that I had personal experience of as well, where I remember as a young goalkeeper, I was having a bit of trouble back end of the season. And Alec Chamberlain came in for me last few games of the season. And it was a really wise call at the time because, you know, Melier, for all the experience he has gained over the last couple of years, when you've had a couple of rough games and you're going in, maybe a little bit more pressure that you're feeling because the games haven't necessarily gone quite how you would have wanted them to. Sometimes a fresh goalkeeper coming in who's stepping in with real positivity and excitement that they've got the game, it might be a better call in that moment. Now, you know, and I'm saying that now, and it's easy with hindsight because he did have a solid game. I'm still not sure whether he touched his penalty, by the way. I've watched it so many times. I know that the claim is that he did, but I don't know. It's really tough to see. But if he did, it's an unbelievable save. I will give him that. And in fairness, he did look, the energy that he played with, he did look confident. He did look like he was, you know, really excited to be there. So as much as it was a big call, I guess where, you know, credit's due, it looked like it was the right call. And look, I do think that, let's say they finish now with Robles back end of the season, I do think Melier, providing they're still Premier League, will be the number one going into next season. I don't doubt that at all. But there are moments, and I guess this is where, you know, the big managers, and of course he's let us know that he is very much as big as the likes of Guardiola and so on. So, but this is where the big managers make the big calls and you can maybe sense whether someone has got that bit more confidence.
There was a lot of after timing about that penalty, wasn't there, as well, on the fact that Ilkay Gundogan took it instead of Erling Haaland. And even the commentary, even Pep Guardiola, by the way, it's all right for everybody to give it the big end after Gundogan has missed it. But if Guardiola was that passionate about Haaland taking that, he would have been up on his touchline before the penalty had been taken. It's okay to, after the penalty's been missed, to say, you should be taking it, you should be taking it. Make the call beforehand. No commentator saying, no, this is the wrong decision. Only when he misses, see, there's no room for sentiment in football. Okay, well, you weren't saying that before the penalty was taken, were you? If it had gone in, it would have been a lovely gesture from Erling Haaland.
I agree. It was just quite funny, really, because like you say, if it goes in, hat trick, what a day. And there's such a... And I think of that moment, because they were cruising, you know, as much as then obviously Leeds get that goal and that then heightens. And of course, it would have been... You imagine if they got an equaliser, it would have been an even bigger talking point. But you're right, nobody questioned it. Even, you know, myself watching it, I thought that is... But you don't expect Gundogan to miss either. That's... It's not like... The other thing I would say, and look, don't get me wrong, Erling Haaland, I'm just an unbelievable player, but he's not the best penalty taker, in my opinion. You know, he doesn't watch the goalkeeper. He'll pick a corner, hits the corner. His record is so-so, from what I know. He's missed quite a lot. So it wasn't like he's that much of an upgrade from Gundogan anyway. So, like you said, it was all very, yeah, after the moment and, yeah, hindsight, you should be taking it. No, I was probably the same as you. I thought that's a really nice gesture, especially someone who's got as many goals as Haaland has got, kind of showing that he's not that selfish, really, which for someone who's got 50-odd goals is quite unique.
Over to the London Stadium, where it's about time we had one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper, keeper.
So David De Gea, who was making his 540th appearance for United, that is a record for a goalkeeper at the club, but making an error that has been spoken about widely across all platforms of the media. And I actually thought the pundits were quite soft on BT Sport. It was Jermaine Genus, wasn't it, on co-commentary, who was trying to find a reason as to why he managed to let Said Benrahma's shot slip through his hands and into the net for a 1-0 win for West Ham against Manchester United. Jermaine Defoe, perhaps not as kind on Match of the Day too. We had a tweet in from Neil Ince who said, why can the pundits not see that David De Gea's left leg just slightly slipped, his left foot just slightly slipped, and that's the reason why the goal went in. It was an error. In my opinion, we can't actually defend it, but let's try and break it down. What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, do you know, it's interesting for a few reasons. Firstly, we actually made a point on the previous podcast about how he's made the save with his top hand, and I questioned it at the time because I felt like technically it wasn't the right save to make in that moment, but he kept out the goal, and I think Peter Schmeichel made a point, kept out the goal, who cares? But we did just question again the technique on this. Look, I think there's a couple of things here. I think firstly, he's had to backpedal a long, long way in order to then set and look to make the save. He's pretty much gone from the edge of the box all the way back to about 5 yards out. I don't think he gets a proper dive away. The actual technique on the dive, and this is why I related back to that, the technique was poor. Now, the bit we can't necessarily know, and only David De Gea will know, is how much that slip affected him. And I think part of that is, again, you're backpedaling, you then set, you then go to explode to dive. And if you don't quite get the push off from your back leg to then transfer into your front leg to then get the full dive to the right, you could see he doesn't cover a lot of ground, which is very unlike De Gea. And then the dive itself, the angle of the dive is backwards. He doesn't get much of a hand on it. And of course, it nestles in the corner. So it does look poor. Again, like we like to do, try and break it down and give reasons, not necessarily excuses, but reasons. I do think it's that. I think the speed at which he's had to backpedal, and I don't know if he can necessarily change that, you know, possession being what it was, and he's had to backpedal very quickly, doesn't quite get his set, doesn't quite push off. He's diving backwards. He's then not able to get a hand to it. So yeah, it's one that he'll look back on and be very frustrated by. In terms of what he could do differently next time, it is difficult when you are backpedaling like that. And I think that if he does get a good set and he gets that dive away and he can angle that dive slightly forward, then I do think this is quite a comfortable save. So it's been really interesting to see the feedback across the board, really, even with newspaper articles. And it kind of goes from just hot, cold with De Gea. One week he's, you know, fantastic, needs to stay at Man United. The next, oh, we need shot of him. It's so, so fickle. And it literally is changing game by game. It will be a fascinating summer in regards to De Gea and United's goalkeeping situation. But I think with this, no one's really gone into that much detail. Even there, you were saying they were trying to find reasons, but they didn't necessarily give any technical analysis. That's, again, and probably where we come in. But I just think it's that. I think if he does get back, gets his set in, then I'm sure this is a comfortable save.
And I think the reason as well that the reaction has been so varied in recent weeks is because, and we've covered this quite extensively as well ourselves in recent weeks, is because in United's next game, David De Gea will probably go out and have a worldie. And that's just what's so intriguing about this goalkeeper.
Well, what you see as well, and you're right. And what you see as well is then, of course, when you have one moment like that, they then pick up on all the moments in the game, which maybe he could have done a bit more on. You know, cross comes in, which he gets fouled, gets the foul. But again, they're questioning, could he have done this? Could he have done that? So it is, it's just, look, it's the media are what they are. And that is the nature of the beast. It's then questioning his mentality, questioning, you know, whether he was up for this game, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's one of them. We all have games like it when a couple of things don't necessarily go your way and you come out thinking, I wasn't great today. But it's amazing how overboard. And I guess it's because it's Man United and there is so much scrutiny on Manchester United. And if you play for Manchester United, it does just feel like that. But again, it can then turn very, very quickly, as you say. If, you know, I'm sure he'll play well again the next game and then this is forgotten for another week.
Anfield, where it was Liverpool 1, Brentford 0. And I just wanted to talk about this game because it was so enjoyable to watch from a goalkeeping perspective in seeing both Alisson and David Raya so adept with their feet. Just two goalkeepers very comfortable with the ball at their feet. And that made it quite an enjoyable watch, I think.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. These are two really good examples for young goalkeepers watching in where the ability and the bravery to wait for the striker to close them down and be within a yard or two of them. Edison, of course, does it really well as well. And by doing that and finding the pass, you've instantly taken a player or sometimes breaking lines, taking several players out of play in one movement. And I think we're seeing that more and more. And these, as I say, are two brilliant examples of it. I think Alisson's so calm on the ball. A few times as well where ball's coming back and ordinarily you'd see the keeper just go long. But the bravery, again, is probably the word I'd use, to take the touch around the striker and then play it out simply. And again, you're taking players out of play. And it goes back to, I mean, we've had so many conversations about this, teams that want to play out and the advantage of doing so. And certainly now with all the statisticians out there, they're going to use examples like this as to how goalkeepers are able to do that. Instantly, you're setting off attack after attack after attack. And as I say, these are two of the best.
100 clean sheets in all competitions for Alisson at Liverpool too. He's the fourth quickest to do so. He's done it in 229 games. Fairly straightforward, Richard, but give me the other three, please.
Okay, I'm going to go with Bruce Grobbelaar.
Correct. 209 games.
I'm going to go with David James.
Incorrect.
Really? I'd have thought it had been... Okay. It's got me thinking now. Got me thinking. Pepe Reina.
Correct. Top of the pile. 197 games. And the man second in the list is a goalkeeping legend and someone that you encountered early on in your career, I believe, who coached you for a period.
Is it Ray Clements?
It is Ray Clements. 201 games.
Very good. So I'll take that. I had a fourth guess, but 3 out of 4.
We'll give it to you just. Wolves 1, Aston Villa 0. And Jose Sarr bouncing back from the big defeat last week with a clean sheet and a very good save from Emi Buendia.
Yeah, great save. Great save. Because I know there were a few question marks, again, just seeing a lot of the newspaper articles this week as to whether Dan Bentley might step in. But the manager stuck with and showed faith to Jose Sarr and certainly repaid it. The save down low to his right was, yeah, exceptional. You know, it was going right in the corner and... Yeah, just the speed and athleticism and technique, of course, but the way in which he got down, got a hand to it, this beats most goalkeepers.
And finally, just to finish at the City Ground, another thriller last night, Nottingham Forest 4, Southampton 3. Keylor Navas, we already know this, but we saw it yesterday quite a lot. He does love a punch, doesn't he? And a really satisfying punch too. Mm.
Very proactive. You know, there's a few instances in this game where it might have been a loose ball and maybe he didn't feel in that moment he could dive and catch the ball. So he does like to do that. He's very, very quick off the mark. And like you say, the power that he gets on the punches and the speed at which he gets to them, it then doesn't become a question mark. You know, I think it's a bit different if you kind of feel like he could get there and hold it and maybe it's a weak punch. But the fact that he gets such distance on them, as you say, a very satisfying puncher of the ball, which, you know, it's one that I think obviously we see more and more in the Premier League anyway, but the fact that he's not a 6'5" goalkeeper, it does tend to be a trait of a lot of goalkeepers that are maybe around the 6 foot, 6'1" mark, where sometimes that is the safer option. It was quite interesting that I'm right in saying he got a couple of people questioned the goal.
On the point blank header from Lianco, yeah, that was about 2 yards out. Yeah,
unbelievable. Unbelievable that, you know, it's straight at him. It was straight at him in his face. Like, I don't know how you're going to control that. Like, you've got no reaction time. He's gone, obviously, his hands are set in the position you'd expect them to be set in, and it's just hit his head. And unfortunately for him, it then ends up in the goal. But again, for the life of me, it just seems like it's another situation where it's, he gets something on it, or, it's gone straight at him. But it's irrelevant. If you've got 4 yards and you've got zero reaction time, nobody makes that save. Or you might get lucky. It might hit you in the face and go out of the goal. But how there can be anything or any question labelled at him for that is beyond me.
While we're on that, actually, to finish up on the Premier League, we should mention that we mentioned it last week that Kasper Schmeichel was going to be on Monday Night Football that evening for the game between Leicester and Everton. How enjoyable was that to watch too? It was so good. It felt like a live episode of the Goalkeepers Union podcast playing out right in front of my eyes on Monday Night Football. It was so good to watch, so good to see Kasper Schmeichel there articulating himself so well in front of the likes of Jamie Carragher. And it was just funny to see Carragher's expression when Kasper was explaining to him effectively what goalkeeping is, because Carragher was doing that classic thing of putting his hands up to try and mimic what position a goalkeeper should be in. And on so many occasions, Carragher would say, well, shouldn't a goalkeeper do this? And what about when this happens? Shouldn't a goalkeeper do this? And Kasper was patient and every time just said, no, Jamie, that's not correct. This is the way it should be. And typically, they got back into their boys' club, Carragher and David Jones, the presenter of Monday Night Football, when Kasper, I think, mentioned to the untrained eye And Jamie Carragher laughed and said, well, there's a lot of them. And then Jones himself laughed. And Casper said, well, yeah, do you know what? There are a lot of trained eyes because none of you have actually stepped foot in a goal. And it was really good afterwards as well when he said that sometimes their comments are quite damaging. And even more so at the end when Carragher said, I'm never speaking about goalkeeping again. So it felt like Casper's job had been done, really, done for all of us. And just hopefully it's something that we might see more of. But on the whole, just a really, really good thing to see a goalkeeper on that panel and speaking honestly and openly and very eloquently about goalkeeping.
Well, do you know what? Without wishing Casper's retirement upon him anytime soon, I really, really hope he goes into that role because he, I've said it many times, but he's got the stature. He's, you know, highly intelligent. He's opinionated in a good way. Certainly when it comes to goalkeeping, he knows his stuff, so knowledgeable. It's just, I try to think of an example, but it is, it's like if you've got a load of mates just gossiping about something and then you've got someone who actually steps in and just tells facts and just gives them the truth, and then it's like, oh, okay, we can't really gossip between us anymore, because that's what it is. It's, you've got a load of people on the panel that they're all in the same mold, so they all kind of like G each other on and just say whatever they say. No one's ever going to question them, and suddenly you've brought in an expert and it's like, oh, okay, we can't really talk about goalkeepers anymore, can we? Because we've got someone that's going to call us out. So I, again, and I know Casper listens in from time to time, so look, I do hope you have many more years playing at the very top level, but I also hope you take up that role very soon.
It is the EFL overview, where we shall start in the Championship, where, goodness me, glory be, yet again, it has proved to be what a league it is, because results were all over the show yesterday. And James Shea, with a first start in more than a year for Luton Town, keeping it clean for the Hatters in their goalless draw with the Hull City side, also with a returnee in Matty Ingram named as the number one for the final day. Not a bad pour from him to keep out Joe Taylor. Dan Grimshaw, no time for sentiment in goalkeeping. A very good save to deny Timu Pukki a goal on his final appearance for Norwich City. Love to see that. George Long and Ainsley Pears involved in a corker at the Den. Long seemingly unsighted for two of Blackburn's four goals. Pears seemingly unheard or perhaps ignored for what looked like it might be the killer goal for Millwall from Oliver Burke. A vital parry from Pears also certainly did a job in creating the winner for Ben Brereton-Diaz. Kanai Boyce-Clark with a tough debut for a Reading side out on their feet at Huddersfield. And QPR, Senny Dieng, although on the losing side at home to Bristol City, perhaps becoming the first goalkeeper to ever be awarded goal of the season. His late header at Sunderland earlier in the campaign landing him that gong.
Yeah, well, as you say, yeah, phenomenal final day. And I think like most, I was watching it on Sky Sports News. I had a couple of games on in the background as well, and just watching it all unfold. And every year, you always get that final day drama. And yeah, several things to talk about that. I mean, the one that I'll just mention, and just because it's one that I feel like I've had a few times, it's a horrible one for a keeper, the one that Ainsley Pears was involved in, where it's that crossfield ball, it's probably not quite making the box, but you're on the front foot, you want to be proactive, you give a big shout, and the defender then takes it into their own hands. It's one of them where you end up looking, I suppose, a bit silly, because yeah, if the defenders were to just listen to you, then no doubt he would have got there first and would have been able to clear it. But I just don't know what a goalkeeper can do in that situation. Some might say that maybe if he'd have stayed back, the defender could have headed it back to him. That might have been the other solution here. But it is frustrating when you do call and the defender doesn't hear you or doesn't necessarily listen in that moment. And naturally, that would be a situation where, you know, many pundits will naturally blame the goalkeeper.
Just a word on Ainsley Pears, because it looked like, for all the will in the world, that he was going to move on loan in January, but for various reasons, one of those being an injury to Thomas Kaminski, he got a chance as the number one at Blackburn. It felt like everybody thought that was going to be a temporary solution until Kaminski returned to fitness, but John Dale Thomason liked what he saw from Pears. He stayed in. Blackburn didn't make the playoffs, but I think his reputation as a result has grown somewhat.
Yeah, it's interesting, because we spoke about it a lot on this podcast, which is, you know, a lot of goalkeeping departments, you've got a settled 1-2-3 or 1-2, depending on the division. And this was certainly that. The one thing I would say is now there's some decisions that need to be made, because obviously Kaminski, Belgian international, has been one of, if not the top goalkeeper in the Championship for the last couple of years. So I don't know what happens now, because then similarly Ainsley Pears will have a taste for it. As you say, on the whole, he's put in some solid displays. So I really don't know what happens there. You kind of feel, and again, we've given examples in the Premier League that are similar, where something now needs to shift, because neither goalkeeper is going to be happy being a number two there anymore. So as you say, huge credit to Ainsley Pears. He's got the shirt and he's put in a good number of performances now. And you do just wonder how it'll play out this summer.
Into League One, and Cam Dawson finishing the season how he started it in mid-season, having taken the gloves from David Stockdale in December, only to then hand them back in March, only to regain them a few games later. But two very good saves to deny David McGoldrick as Sheffield Wednesday storm into the playoffs and Derby bow out. Josh Luwayemi handed just a fourth start of the campaign for Portsmouth, caught playing out for Wickham's opener, and then, well, simply caught by Lewis Wing with a phenomenal strike in what ended as a 2-2 draw. And Marco Morosi signing off with a penalty save from Lincoln's Max Sanders in a 1-0 defeat to the Imps.
Yeah, a couple of things to mention here. I felt for Oluwayemi because I've had this exact situation where he's gone to play out and it wasn't a particularly good pass, obviously intercepted, and then you're backpedaling, you're trying to get yourself set, but you've still got in your mind, like, damn, I've just messed up the pass. Then the shot comes in. It is a real tricky one. It's down by his feet. It's dipping. It's a horrible ball. But again, it just compounds the initial pass. So I do feel for him because it's, as I say, I remember when I had at Colchester, it sticks in my mind where I've had a poor clear out. And then in my mind, you're almost hoping that the ball just gets cleared. And it's one of those after the game you just put down as a bad clearance. And then the guy shot from about 20 yards, moved on me a little bit. I've misjudged it. It's gone through me. And then again, it just compounds that initial error. So I did feel for him because, again, he's had a few opportunities at Portsmouth season. I know they rate him very, very highly. And no doubt he'll have wanted to have finished the season on a high, but I'm sure he'll get either a very good loan next season, or again, if they do keep him in that two slot, no doubt he'll kick on and be stronger for this. A couple of others that you mentioned, the save from Cameron Dawson, I had to mention that. The one top corner, just brilliant. Like, for me, save of the weekend. I'll go as far as to say that. I just thought as going right in the top corner, he's moved so well. The athleticism that he's shown to get that top hand, it's just a beautiful save. Top, top save. And the penalty save from Morosi, as you mentioned, I thought was excellent. That's going right in the corner. And again, we know that Morosi is very, very powerful with the speed at which he gets to his left and covers the goal. I thought it was a top save.
And finally, in League Two, Ben Killip returning to the fold for Hartlepool in place of Leicester loanee Jakub Stolarczyk. And in fine fashion, too, that return. First saving from Stockport's Miles Hippolyte, then Isaac Loloafi, then Paddy Madden, and finally a Callum Camps penalty. Potentially the performance of the weekend. And I think if you're going with Cam Dawson, I may go with Killip for save of the weekend. Performance, however, could be challenged by Adam Prishebeck on his first ever EFL start. A decent double save from Barrow's Jed Garner ensured Stevenage ended on a high, as did Northampton and Lee Burge. Another clean sheet in a season where the Cobblers conceded only one or fewer on 35 occasions. So that's a good record from him and Tom Kim combined. And just like Marco Morosi, Corey Adai on the losing side for Crawley at Swindon, but signing off in style with a solid penalty stop from Russian Hepburn Murphy.
Do you know what? I'm going to throw another goalkeeper in the mix here, because I had five of the League Two games on this weekend, which I was watching in the background, had Sky Sports News on at the same time. I'm going to mention Jake Turner as well, because he was excellent. I thought for Gillingham, came in for the final game of the season, made five or six, one in particular reaction save that he's made on the line, but five or six top saves. And do you know what? Now that you've said it, Ben Killip, well, certainly let's mention Prishbeck, because as you mentioned, first start in the EFL. He's been at several clubs, certainly found a good home at Stevenage, came on a game a few weeks ago, did well, and certainly in this game, the double save he made, good save with his feet, got up very quickly. But yeah, I do feel like we need to give probably the most time in this segment to Ben Killip, because, I mean, I felt for Stockport. In the end, thankfully for Stockport, it wasn't costly in the Northampton one as well, so it wouldn't have made any difference. But how Stockport did not win this game is just beyond me. Well, it was because of Ben Killip. You know, the save that he's made onto the bar, you're right, that is very much up there with the Cam Dawson save. Maybe, does it pip it? Okay, maybe I'll give it a joint first, because that was phenomenal. You just knew he was going to save the penalty as well. He'd made so many saves throughout the game, and you could just sense, and he looked excited, and it was nice as well. When he's made the save, he's almost smiling as he's made the save when you watch the replay. Like, he's diving, and you can see the smile's already there, because he knows he's going to make it. And you're right, that was up there with the best performances I've seen this season. clean sheet club. Okay, there's still a couple of weeks left in the Premier League, but this is the final one for the EFL. It is time for this. In the Premier League, Fraser Forster strapped in for the remainder of the season. Jose Sarr, ta-da. Alisson, two in a week. Aaron Ramsdale, first in eight. Lucas Fabianski, feeling great. Into the Championship, Aaron Murich, back to the Prem. Lee Nichols, tidy terrier. James Shea, he liked it, he did. Matt Ingram, handy cross. Dan Grimshaw, Bloom filled in marvellous. Anthony Patterson, black cat. Max O'Leary, red robin. Dan Backman, hurling hornet. Sam Tickle, no relation to John. Victor Johansson, Miller Vanilla. Will Norris, posh boy. Craig McGillivray, true brewer. Jamie Cumming, next challenge ahead. Dimitar Mitov, staying up. Carl Rushworth, on the up and up. Cam Dawson, not over yet. And into League Two, Adam Prijbeck on the board. Marco Morosi, shrewd signing. Max Crocombe, check his Twitter. Jake Turner, nice little learner. Lee Burge, feeling as tall as the Khalifa.
Very good, Richard. Very good. So the final table is finally final, isn't it? All the games are done and dusted in the regular season. Of course, there are some Premier League games, but it's very, very, well, it's almost impossible. It's not very unlikely. It's impossible that a goalkeeper will catch the leader. And of course, playoffs are not counted because that would just be unfair. So in sending order, the table of the clean sheet club at 22 clean sheets is James Trafford in 45 games. With 23 clean sheets is Christian Walton in 46 games. And with 24 clean sheets, winner of the 2022-23 clean sheet club in 49 games is... Mr. Lawrence Vigouroux of Leighton Orient.
Well, there you go. And I know that Lawrence won several other awards this season. Player of the season, 3 years running now for Leighton Orient. But I've got no doubt that if we do decide to get an award made for this, this will sit even more proudly than that.
Excellent. Okay, Richard, that's pretty much us. But we do have time quickly for one more of these.
Well, well, well. If it isn't a keeper, caper.
Jasper Cillessen playing over in the Eredivisie for NEC Nijmegen at the moment. Gifted Head and Vane a winner in their clash at the weekend. And yes, we can talk about the error, but let's instead talk about the fact that he decided to headbutt the post as a result. We normally see a boot on the post, not a head on the post.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums up how he felt about that moment. And I felt for him, he's just got his bearings wrong. You know, he thought he was going the other side of the post. He's allowed it very tamely to go in the corner. And yeah, you're angry in that moment. I've been there. And normally it's, for me, it's a punch in the ground or kick in the post. But he took it to the next level, decided to headbutt the post.
You felt like afterwards he was then holding his head as if to say, oh, no, I've made a mistake. But maybe he was holding his head because he was like, oh, that really hurt. And I can't show that it really, really hurt. And I do have to ask you as well, Richard, how old were you again when you retired from professional football, from all forms of football?
32.
Okay. Well, Elgin City goalkeeping coach Stevie Dunn wrote himself into Scottish footballing history at the weekend when he came on for a cameo appearance against Bonnyrigg Rose. He came on in stoppage time at the age of 52 years old.
Wow, that is incredible. Yeah. I'm 40 now. I know how I feel. There is absolutely no chance I'd be able to do a cameo role at 52. Big well done to him.
That makes him the oldest player in SPFL history. So well done, Stevie Dunn. Stevie, well done.
There you go. Very nice.
What a way to end it. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, keepers
away. Oh, wow.